From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Eastern Ukraine separatists declaring independence, disputes in the South China Sea. Tensions are high in Nigeria surrounding the kidnappings, plus binge drinking, most harmful to health. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Eastern Ukraine's Donetsk region has declared independence and is asking Moscow to consider letting it become a part of Russia. During a news conference, the election chief of the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic, Roman Lyajkin, said around 75% of the Donetsk region's 3 million voters cast ballots Sunday in favor of independence from Kiev.
Ми знаємо і так, ми прекрасно розуміємо, що його не признають.
He said, we completely understand that this referendum will not be recognized by the outside world. European organizations and international governments will not recognize it. But he said, through this referendum, we want everyone to listen to us and the power of the people.
Той фарс, який сепаратисти називають.
Also Monday, Ukraine's interim president, Oleksandr Turchynov, slammed the rebel-held voting in Donetsk and Luhansk as shams. Meantime, the European Union has imposed sanctions on 13 more people and two companies it says are linked to Moscow's intervention in Ukraine. And following that controversial referendum on secession, Eastern Ukrainian separatist leaders say they will form their own army, adding to the irregular forces appearing across the region. Jamie Detmer has more from Donetsk.
The townsfolk of the small mining town of Krasnomysk had other things on their minds last night when 70 kilometers to their south, separatist leaders in Donetsk came out with a surprisingly early announcement of a landslide majority in favor of seceding from Ukraine. They had just been visited by irregulars who they claim were from the Dnipro Battalion, a pro-unity self-defense force raised in a nearby city by an oligarch offering bounty money for any separatist leader killed. Sergei, a local builder, says he rushed to the town hall where voting had been taking place and saw one person on the ground shot dead. Other shocked locals VOA spoke with said 40 masked gunmen came storming into town and ordered the polling stations to close, and after exchanging words with an angry crowd, the fighters started shooting. A policeman confirmed two people had died. Sergei is exasperated, saying he's for a united Ukraine, but it should not matter whether the region is Ukrainian or Russian or part of Europe or not. He just wants a good life and salary. Even before yesterday's controversial secession referendum, which was dogged with allegations of voter fraud, stuffed ballot boxes and multiple voting, it was difficult for people to stand on the sidelines. Separatist intimidation, abductions and the murder of opponents on one side and punitive raids on the other is forcing people to choose sides, even when they do not want to. And the battle lines are likely to get sharper. Following Sunday's referendum, which has been condemned as a criminal farce by the government in Kiev, but accepted as legitimate by Moscow, separatist leaders in Donetsk say they will form their own army and expect all forces affiliated with Kiev to leave the region. The government is already struggling with its anti-separatist military campaign and is short of men. Analysts say they fear the government is likely to rely on irregulars more, and the fighting could spread beyond the regions, Donetsk and Luhansk, that voted Sunday. Luhansk separatist leader Valery Bolotov, a former paratrooper, says now that their plebiscites are over, his pro-Russian militiamen, as well as separatists from Donetsk, will start turning their attention elsewhere to help other regions agitate for a break from Ukraine. He says separatists will not enter any talks with Kiev, and the only negotiations currently are about prisoner and hostage exchanges. The stage appears to be set for more fighting, increasing the prospects of a Russian intervention. Jamie Detmer, VOA News, Donetsk.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA. a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
The Islamist militant group Boko Haram has released a video it claims shows dozens of missing schoolgirls abducted last month in northern Nigeria. In the video, the group's leader, Abubakar Shekau, claims the girls have been liberated, his words, by becoming Muslims. He says the girls will not be released until the group's imprisoned fighters are freed in Nigeria. Meantime, tensions are high as security forces break up protests demanding the rescue of the girls. Heather Murdoch is in Abuja with our report.
This is a protest in the Nigerian capital Sunday.
Bring back our girls now and alive!
That quickly turned into this. Before the police dispersed the protesters and the rally ended. Another weekend protest scheduled in Kaduna, a city known for sectarian violence, never happened. After both mosques and churches were attacked, parts of the city are under 24-hour curfew, and all protests are banned. During the weekend, police occupied locations around the city where rallies were planned. Protest organizer Ibrahim Garba Walla held a news conference after the rally failed to materialize.
We were shocked even at last night. The venue, which is the Murtala Square, where we agreed that we're going to hold the protest, was already dominated by security personnel with their tankers and heavy machineries.
Walla says the weaponry on the streets of Kaduna this weekend would better be deployed in the northeast, where security forces are searching for nearly 300 teenage girls, believed to be held hostage in the forest by Islamist militants known as Boko Haram. Kaduna City has long been a hotspot for political and community violence, and nearly 1,000 people were killed there in post-election violence in 2011. As presidential elections approach in 2015, Kaduna residents fear more bloodshed. In Kaduna, anger over general insecurity has intensified since the girls were kidnapped, says Walla.
We are telling people to understand that the crisis in Nigeria, the crisis in Northeast, is not being perpetrated by the poor man,
yes,
but is being perpetrated by the politicians.
Yes.
Security crises in Kaduna, part of Nigeria's Middle Belt, where the mostly Christian South meets the mostly Muslim North, is often attributed to politicians hiring thugs to intimidate or punish voters. In the Northeast, Boko Haram insurgents have killed thousands of people in the past 5 years, including hundreds of schoolchildren. The mid-April kidnapping sparked protests in Nigeria and around the world, demanding the girls' safe return. Officially, the Nigerian government supports the protest movement. Nigerian police spokesperson Frank Mba appeared Monday in Abuja.
The position of the Nigerian police force is clear. Nigerians have got the right to peaceful assembly, to peaceful association, to peaceful protest, as long as they do so within the confines and ambits of the law.
In the past week, the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Canada, China, and Israel have agreed to provide material support for the rescue effort, a task U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says will be a huge challenge. In a video distributed to journalists last week, the man who claims to lead Boko Haram, Abubakar Shekau, says his group is holding the girls as slaves to be sold as wives. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
And a new report on weapons proliferation in Sudan and South Sudan sheds light on how years of illicit arms trading has fueled the current conflict in the South. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports questions do remain about how rebel groups are sustaining the fight.
A report released by the Small Arms Survey documents evidence Sudan has been the primary supplier of mostly Chinese-made weapons to insurgent groups going back to conflicts surrounding South Sudan's eventual independence in 2011. Report co-author Jonah Leff says those actions have helped supply armed groups involved in fighting today between South Sudan's government and rebel forces.
A lot of the weapons that are circulating with the rebels, but also with some of the tribal militias, such as the White Army or Nuer Youth, originate in Sudan. So a couple of years ago, there were examples of Sudan arming various rebel groups that were then supplying those weapons on to these tribal militias. And we've seen a number of these popping up.
The White Army is an informal militia from the ethnic Nuer community that has supported rebel leader Riek Machar, also in Nuer. A political dispute between Machar and President Salva Kiir, a Dinka, erupted in violence in December, dividing the armed forces along ethnic lines. Left says both sides of the conflict appear to be equally well-armed, as they originated from the same army. The question, he says, is how rebels have been able to resupply ammunition.
There's been ongoing battles since the middle of December, and there's no way that they would have had sufficient quantities or stockpiles of ammunition to sustain that fighting.
Left says Sudan could still be supplying groups linked to Machar, but says getting access to equipment seized from the rebels is a challenge. The report finds the majority of weapons, such as assault rifles and rocket-propelled grenade launchers, imported by Sudan, are made in China, with a percentage coming from Iran. Sudan is also increasingly manufacturing its own weapons. Sudan is under an arms embargo applied only to the Darfur region to limit supplies of weapons to government-aligned militia. A previous small arms survey report in 2012 noted that despite the ban, all sides in that conflict continued to gain access to military resources. Meanwhile, the report says tracing arms flows is becoming more difficult as serial numbers and other identifying marks are being deliberately scraped off of weapons found in conflict zones. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
China is a fascinating country
with interesting people doing amazing things.
Every Friday, we focus attention on some of our favorite things coming out of China during the previous week.
It may be political, it may be cultural.
It may simply be a curiosity that caught our attention.
But we'll find stories sure to be of interest.
And then, of course, we'll add our own American perspectives as well.
I'm Sarah Williams.
I'm Jim Stevenson.
Join us for China Focus every Friday at 12 hours Universal Time on VOA Radio.
And anytime on the web at voanews.com and on Facebook VOA Asia.
Southeast Asian leaders have expressed their serious concern over escalating maritime disputes in the South China Sea, just days after Vietnam and the Philippines challenged China in separate incidents in the potentially energy-rich waters. In a final statement from a summit in Burma, also known as Myanmar, the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations urged the parties to resolve disputes by peaceful means. Chinese and Vietnamese ships collided last week in a dispute over Beijing's placement of an oil rig in contested waters. Carl Thayer, professor emeritus at the University of New South Wales, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the location of the rig, the relocation of the oil rig by China, was unexpected given improving relations with Hanoi.
Since Premier Li Keqiang's visit last October, China-Vietnam relations were on a strong upward trajectory. And after Li Keqiang's visit, there was a welter of documents released about joint cooperation, development, and moving on to issues in the South China Sea. And indeed, from October up until the oil rig, border committees and everybody had met. Yes, this has created a serious problem, and my understanding is that Vietnam has been rebuffed in its attempt to establish a hotline between party leader to party leader, and it is proposed sending, as it has twice in the past, a special envoy to Beijing, and it still hasn't received an affirmative action. So Vietnam is a bit frustrated because in the past, less serious territorial disputes, but nonetheless serious ones at that time, have seen high-level consultations and then a lowering of temperatures. And in this case, China appears to be stonewalling.
Will this latest row drive ASEAN members, which have been somewhat difficult in unifying, together?
The statement issued by the ASEAN foreign ministers is important because it is standalone, because it draws attention to a current development. Everybody knows what they're talking about. It's a short statement, but it repeats standard the ASEAN position, upholding law, non-use of force, getting on with the code of conduct. That could be seen, in a sense, as siding with Vietnam, because anything involving the paracels has been viewed as a bilateral matter between Vietnam and China, and ASEAN doesn't want a part of it. But the second level, already we've seen Malaysia and Indonesia, prior to all of this controversy, take steps to bolster their military in areas that they think might be under threat in the South China Sea. So the core members of ASEAN, Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, along with Philippines and Vietnam, are going to be more steeled to react because of China's unexpected behavior, not just an oil rig, but reportedly up to 80 vessels, and again reportedly including 7 Navy warships.
You were just in Vietnam. One report suggests there is growing anti-China sentiment. Did you detect that?
Most Vietnamese elite and students and academics already view China as an enemy because of its assertions. But while I was in Hanoi, several things have happened that are quite interesting. The regime has given incredible detailed coverage on its media, repeated, showing the Chinese water cannons, showing the ramming of the ships, and then pictures of the injured seamen lying on the deck being treated. So this is going to arouse sentiment, and that's a deliberate decision by the government. And then the government also, in a sense, authorized by winking, by allowing demonstrations in Ho Chi Minh City, Hanoi, and Da Nang, and repeatedly elsewhere, but demonstrations that also included regime loyalists to prevent these demonstrations from moving beyond the South China Sea-type issues and into larger issues about the government itself. So the government is using both publicity and a popular outrage as a counterpoint to China.
Carl Thayer, Professor Emeritus at the University of New South Wales, he was speaking with my colleague Victor Beatty. Well, the Philippines, as we mentioned earlier, has been involved in a dispute with China. Well, they charged 9 Chinese fishermen on Monday with poaching more than 500 endangered sea turtles at the disputed Half Moon Shoal in the South China Sea. China has pressed the Philippines government to free the fishermen and the boat, saying they were apprehended in Chinese territorial waters. Officials say the turtles recovered alive by police have been returned to the sea, but there is footage of the dead turtles, some of them apparently butchered, that have sparked condemnations. Jose Maria Lorenzo Tan heads the conservation group World Wildlife Fund in the Philippines.
I don't think anyone can exaggerate the brutality of what they did. But whether it is a turtle or a bird or a anteater, the point here is that we need these animals to keep our seas productive.
Tan also said in a world faced with resource scarcity, it makes no sense at all, he says, for one country to try to gain control of that rapidly diminishing resource.
We have one planet, and if we deplete one portion of it, the way China has wiped out their own oceans, forcing them to enter into waters close to the Philippines, waters close to Malaysia, to Papua New Guinea, to Indonesia. Something is very wrong. Because if they will wipe out our resources as well, then we have no common future.
Spratly Islands, where Half Moon Shoal is located, are a major cluster of potentially oil and gas-rich islands and reefs long disputed by China, the Philippines, Taiwan, Malaysia, Vietnam, and Brunei.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Scientists overwhelmingly agree global warming exists and human beings are largely responsible. But Antarctica seems to have bucked the trend, with portions of it cooling while the rest of the planet heats up. VOA's Roseanne Skirbel reports.
The key to Antarctic weather is the wind, says Australian National University climate scientist Neroli Abram, the lead author of the study.
So they control how far north the rain bands go out of the Southern Ocean. And they also are really important for temperature, and in particular for the temperature of Antarctica and also the Antarctic Peninsula, which is the bit of Antarctica that juts out right into the path of those westerly winds.
That westerly wind belt circulates the continent. The study in the journal Nature Climate Change finds that those winds are now stronger and their path tighter than any time in the past 1,000 years. That change has been especially prominent since the 1940s. Abram and her team reconstructed Antarctica's climate history from ice cores. They conclude the wind has kept a large part of the continent cold, unlike anywhere else on the planet.
But we can explain that because as those westerly winds are getting stronger, they're actually tying the cold air over Antarctica and stops warm air masses from being able to get over the continent and help to warm Antarctica. So this example of something that seemed like a climate change paradox we can actually explain by these greenhouse gases that are strengthening the westerly winds and isolating parts of Antarctica.
But they're not isolating the Antarctic Peninsula and parts of the western Antarctic ice sheet that lie directly in their path.
So as those winds have strengthened and pulled in tighter around Antarctica, they're actually bringing warmer air over those parts, particularly over the Antarctic Peninsula, and this is the part of the southern hemisphere that's warming faster than anywhere else on Earth at the moment.
Abram says those westerly winds have deviated from their natural course, which would have driven cold fronts into the southern hemisphere. Instead, the air is trapped over Antarctica and keeping rain from falling on Australia.
What's been happening over the recent decades is that those westerly winds have been shifting south, and we're getting fewer of those cold fronts and storms coming up and giving that really important rain. And so that's why Australia is experiencing these very severe droughts.
Abram adds the southern ocean winds, which have intensified because of the warmer atmosphere, could revert to a more normal pattern if action were taken to reduce greenhouse gases. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
World Health Organization is urging nations to take action to reduce the harmful effects of alcohol, which it says is killing 3.3 million people each year. Lisa Schlein reporting now from Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports the harmful use of alcohol is responsible for 6% of all deaths around the world. That is one death every 10 seconds. Besides being addictive, the report says alcohol consumption increases the risk of developing more than 200 diseases, including liver cirrhosis and some cancers. For the first time, the WHO says the harmful use of alcohol makes people more susceptible to infectious diseases such as tuberculosis, pneumonia, and HIV. WHO Mental Health and Substance Abuse Director Shekhar Saxena says the organization is concerned about drinking among young adults between ages 15 and 19, and particularly by binge drinking, heavy episodic drinking.
The report concludes that worldwide, 16% of drinkers over the age of 15 engage in binge drinking, which is much more harmful than other kind of drinking, which causes the most harm in terms of accidents, self-harm, and harm to others. High-income countries have the highest alcohol per capita consumption and also the highest prevalence of binge drinking.
The report notes, on average, every person aged 15 or older drinks 6.2 liters of alcohol per year. But since less than 50% of the population drinks alcohol, those who do consume on average 17 liters of pure alcohol a year. The report warns drinking is increasing among women, and this is of concern as they are more vulnerable to some alcohol-related health conditions than men. The highest rates of mortality are found in Europe, followed by the West Pacific and then the Americas region. Globally, the report finds Europe is the region with the highest alcohol consumption, particularly in central and eastern parts, followed by the Americas and Africa. It says Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, Moldova, and some neighboring countries have very high levels of consumption and binge drinking. Although less alcohol is consumed in Africa than in Europe, WHO Management of Substance Abuse Coordinator Vladimir Pozniak says the health impacts are worse in Africa than in Europe.
The difference is that in African region, as well as in other countries with less resources, the consumption of alcohol brings more harm to health and to social relationship because of the absence of buffering factors, which are often like social support, like access to healthcare services. This is what is lacking.
The World Health Organization is urging countries to strengthen measures to protect people from the harmful effects of alcohol abuse. These include increasing taxes on alcohol, raising the drinking age limit, and regulating the marketing of alcoholic beverages. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Many thanks, everyone, for joining us today for International Edition here on The Voice of America. Always good to have you with us, and we hope you'll stay tuned. The latest world news is coming up shortly. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineers, Zahrat Abuzaid and Jim Harmon, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Tuesday.
This is Today in History. On May 13, 1787, British naval officer and colonial administrator Arthur Phillip set sail from England in command of 11 ships full of convicts to establish a British penal colony on the east coast of Australia. Phillip would anchor off Port Jackson, where modern-day Sydney is located. On this day in 1846, U.S. President James Polk signed a declaration of war against Mexico. The war ended 2 years later with Mexico's defeat. It was forced to cede a large swath of territory in what is now the American Southwest. In 1917, three young people reported the first apparition of the Virgin Mary in Fatima, Portugal. The site of the apparition is considered a holy shrine by many Roman Catholics. In 1939, the first commercial FM radio station in the United States was launched in Bloomfield, Connecticut. The station later became WDRC-FM. In 1939, the German ocean liner St. Louis set sail from Hamburg to Havana, Cuba, with more than 900 Jewish refugees fleeing Nazi persecution. The Cuban government refused entry to the passengers. Similar attempts to go to the United States proved futile. After 2 weeks, the vessel was forced to return to Europe. Many of those who returned were killed in the Holocaust. In 1940, 3 days after becoming British Prime Minister, Winston Churchill delivered a memorable speech to the House of Commons. As the battle for France raged, Churchill outlined his war policy with the aim of victory at all costs, adding that he had nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Tensions are rising again in the ongoing dispute over territorial claims in the South China Sea, with a new confrontation between Vietnam and China involving resource rights. An aggressive and tense standoff has developed amid a movement of dozens of Chinese vessels into an area near the disputed Paracel Islands, where Vietnam has tried to prevent China from deploying a massive oil rig. Vietnamese officials said Chinese vessels repeatedly rammed into and fired water cannons at Vietnamese ships that have also arrived in the area, injuring at least 6 Vietnamese sailors. China has called on Vietnam to pull back its ships to resolve the dispute. The confrontation appears to be the most serious in recent years between the two neighbors over control of an area believed to be rich in oil, gas, and other resources. Adding to the controversy, China and the Philippines are also disputing control of other areas of the South China Sea, increasing tensions across the region. The United States is concerned about the new developments and possible danger of escalation, and we urge both parties to exercise restraint. Our country does not take a position on the relative merits of any nation's claim to disputed land features in the South China Sea, including the Paracels. But China's decision to introduce an oil rig accompanied by numerous government vessels for the first time in waters disputed with Vietnam is provocative and raises tensions. This unilateral action appears to be part of a broader pattern of Chinese behavior to advance its claims over disputed territory in a manner that undermines peace and stability in the region. The Asia-Pacific region is directly tied to the United States' long-term economic and security interests, as is a peaceful and productive relationship among our partners there. The events of recent days highlight the need for all parties to clarify their claims in accordance with international law and to reach agreement on appropriate behavior and activities in disputed areas. We call on all parties to conduct themselves in a safe and professional manner, preserve freedom of navigation, and address competing sovereignty claims peacefully.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.